Sam, keeping it true, watching old movies so you don't have to. With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly awful, or did they change history? Good evening, and welcome to the Benefit of Hindsight podcast, the movie podcast in which a father and son talk about movies that they watched together long ago.
We give each movie a memory score and then rewatch the movie to see whether or not the movie is better or worse than we remembered it. And then we score the movie again.
With me as ever is my son Sam. Good evening, Sam.
Good evening, Dad. How are you doing?
I'm good. Interesting take on the introduction we've just introduced there. Can you introduce an introduction?
I think you just did.
Okay, just mixing it up a little bit. Sounded quite good though.
We'll see. In the edit.
How's your week been? What's Sam's anecdote of the week going to be this week?
Well, I feel like I should start this on with a warning, like a content warning, but I feel like tough. You just have to deal with it. I was opening a parcel today.
Right.
That's not the whole anecdote.
Oh, right, okay.
And I used a knife to cut through the sellotape.
Right.
Little did I know that knives go through cardboard, and it went straight into my finger. But the weird thing is, I felt the pain, but there's no cut. So I feel like I'm Superman, but I just feel pain, but don't feel the damage from the pain. What?
Great. So, if I'm hearing the anecdote correctly, you put a knife through some cardboard. It landed on your finger. It caused immediate pain and discomfort. Then when you checked your finger, there was no wound.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And no evidence that you had in any way been in contact with the knife on your finger.
Yeah, the knife is bent though.
Oh. So maybe...
Well, the knife was bent when I started, to be fair though. So, you know.
Oh, right. So that's not a relevant detail.
Unrelated.
Unrelated. Hey, it's quite interesting. There's an anecdote this week.
Oh, thanks.
And the anecdote might actually be that you are in some way invincible.
Yeah, but if the government is listening to this, no, I'm not.
No, you're not. What would be the advantage of being invincible but able to feel pain?
I feel like there's a movie somewhere that is like that. Wait, I think there's a movie coming out.
Is there?
Yeah, with Jack Quaid.
Wow.
However you say his name. I think that's some... Novocaine, I think it's called.
Right.
What a weird coincidence. Anyway.
Yeah, it's like the movie Kick-Ass. But not.
Yeah, that's the other one, yeah.
Which is where not invincible, but also can't feel pain.
Yeah.
Which is a point they conveniently forgot throughout most of those movies.
That is true, yeah.
We didn't watch that at the cinema. We watched that when you were a little bit older.
In a tent, yeah.
It's true. There's a whole nother anecdote in there. But before we go on to anecdote mode one more time, let's go straight in with our listener question. Which this week comes from Michael in Munich in Germany.
Oh.
Which I thought was quite nice. We have quite a lot of listeners in Germany. So thank you out there to our German listeners. Michael's question is very simple. It's in response to the Golden Compass episode. And he agreed with you, actually, that it was not a classic movie. But he thought you were a bit harsh on the score. But Michael's question is very straightforward. If we existed in the world of the Golden Compass and therefore had a demon, what animal would you like your demon to be?
Mine's straight away easily a cat. If I couldn't have a cat, probably a rabbit.
Yeah.
Is that boring?
No, it's probably the one that I would choose. I might go badger.
Okay. Well, yeah, I like badgers a lot, actually. Yeah.
So, or even goat. I like goats.
Yeah.
Goats are cool.
Imagine wandering around with a goat by your side all the time.
But cat would be easier, right? Because, you know.
Yeah.
So, cat or rabbit, you've got to choose one.
Cat.
And yeah. I'm going to go, so I've got badger, goat. I'm going goat.
Okay.
Interesting. I'm not going to explain why. I just think goats are cool.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's all you need.
That's a nice, easy question. Normally we get bogged down in the question, but we got that through that one quite quick. Do keep the listener questions coming in. We do really enjoy getting them. And as always, we have far more questions that we can actually get round to answering than we need. That came out wrong. Do keep them coming in. And when we get to the end of season two, we'll do another question and answer episode like we did before, which is very popular with our listeners. So thanks very much, Michael in Munich, for sending that in. Sam's demon is a cat.
and mine is a goat. How interesting. So as you know, if you listened to the podcast last week, we went away and we watched or rewatched the 2009 Michael Bay classic Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, which, if I remember correctly, I gave an 8 and you also gave an 8. Is that right?
That is right, yes.
So I'll begin with my traditional useless question. At the end of this episode, do you think your score will have changed?
Probably not.
Should we just move to the end then?
Yeah. So my conclusion.
Mine might, depending on the outcome of this conversation, it might change.
Yeah.
But at this point, I sort of can't really say. I'm going to begin with my traditional question. I hope this doesn't preempt a question that you were going to ask, but I always begin with a question, I think. If there was an alternative universe in which films were named after their most discerning or discernible feature, could this movie in fact be called Transformers Revenge of the MacGuffins?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I asked...
That's
all
it is.
I asked the internet how many MacGuffins there are in this movie. Okay? Would you like to hear what they are?
You broke the internet because it's too many to count.
Well, here we go. It begins by saying that there could be 4, okay?
Okay.
The Matrix of Leadership.
Yeah.
The Sun Harvester.
Yeah.
The Shard of the Allspark.
Yeah.
The Tomb of the Primes.
Yeah.
Okay. The Star Harvester Key, the Dagger's Tip. Megatron's Resurrection Site. Sam Witwicky's Brain. The Fallen Sarcophagus. And the final one was that place in Petra, that's name I can't remember. So there could easily be 10 MacGuffins in this movie.
Wow.
That's a lot of MacGuffins.
MacGuffin Central.
MacGuffin Central. Do you think that's a fair leading question to begin with, or do you think I have been a bit mean?
Well, no, I think it's one of those films, like I said last week, there was a writer's strike, so I think they just sort of picked up the script at different stages and added different things, so I actually just agree with it, yeah. It sort of depends on the context of MacGuffin, because I feel like if the MacGuffin carries the story along and keeps adding to it, then sure. Like, if you watch, like, National Treasure or something like that, where they're working to find some sort of mystery, then there's always going to be a MacGuffin that moves them to the next stage. So maybe it's necessary.
Well, that's very true, but I just wonder if 10 is you know, one or two too many. I mean, if you get down to, some of them are loose MacGuffins at best, but definitely, the Shard of the Allspark, the Matrix of Leadership, the Sun Harvester, the Tomb of the Primes, they're all just things that seem to have been thrown into a script to create a plot rather than are driving the plot forward.
Yeah, okay.
But a bit harsh to, as a start.
Well, do you know what it is? I think it would be a bit harsh to any other movie that wasn't Transformers 2.
Yeah.
I think it's justified being that harsh to this sort of thing, yeah. Like, you wouldn't say that about a George Lucas or a Steven Spielberg, but because it's Michael Bay, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I mean, if we get back into the movie proper, rather than my sort of slightly snarky comments about MacGuffins, it's difficult to talk about the cast, because the cast was basically the same as the cast before, and the kind of supporting characters came in and did okay in what they were doing. Did you have any kind of feeling that the cast was less good in this? They didn't get the character right or anything like that from the previous incarnation?
Well, I think for certain characters, it's definitely a good step up in terms of what they did last time. So Simmons in particular, I think I prefer his character this time around and have a bit more respect for his character, I suppose, because he's actually part of it and he's getting involved and he's not just the negative voice. He's there to help this time around. And I think everyone else, it kind of makes sense. What sort of bothers me about this film the whole time, and this is just getting into something we'll watch down the line, we go through in like over 2 hours of Sam and Michaela trying to decide if they love each other, or at least to say it to each other. And then by the third film, there's a completely different female lead. So it almost feels like, in hindsight, what was the point of us sitting through 2 hours of that conversation if it wasn't going to make a difference? Obviously, there's other things about that.
I think, wasn't there a big falling out between her and their director or something like that? Did they just have a very public spat?
Yeah, it was between her and Steven Spielberg. I think I mentioned it on the last podcast, but we cut it because it might be a bit too inappropriate.
Right, okay.
Reference.
I think, as always, if you have decent enough actors in decent enough parts, you get good value out of them. I still think Shia, we haven't yet decided, LaBeouf, is a very fine actor. I thought he was great in it. I just think it's the role he was born to play. It's much less irritating than he was in Indy 4. And a much more mature performance than you may have seen in his other movie that I like, which is Holes. I thought he was great. I mean, I have no criticism to make whatsoever of this actor.
Yeah, there was a part of it where I came out of the whole watching it. You know when you sit and watch a movie and you get so involved that you forget you're watching a movie?
Yeah.
I had one of those moments where I sort of came out of that and was like, wait, this is the same guy from Indiana Jones 4. This doesn't feel right. And I was like, why does that work? But this doesn't.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know what I mean? But I think he did a really good job. And I think he improved from the first Transformers, because that was a lot of just repeating the same shouty thing. Whereas in this one, you feel like he's determined to do it and he's got motivation the whole way through. And I think it just works that way, yeah.
And there was a little bit of character development as well, you know, that he's going to college, he's a man now. And there was not a lot, and you don't look for character development in these movies, but at least there was some form of arc in there in terms of his character. I still think his mum and dad are hilarious. I thought they were great. I just think if you get, like all of these things, like we said before, if you're going to have relatively small roles but decent actors in them, and John Turturro as Simmons just made everything better.
Yeah, especially this time around.
He's such a good actor.
Yeah.
If we hadn't already invented the Cardellini maneuver,
it
would be possible to invent the John Turturro maneuver, where any movie that he's in automatically gains an extra point. But we've done it now. It's too late. You can't go back on it. It's too late.
Speaking of manoeuvres, though, I know we scrapped last week's one of the scrappy manoeuvre for Scrappy-Doo. I think Leo could easily have just not been in the film.
100%.
And probably shouldn't have been.
100%.
And I thought that as a kid, to be honest. Yeah.
It, as a character, he does nothing. There's no foil. He's not particularly comic relief. He doesn't do anything particularly heroic at the end. He's not adding anything to the story. I don't know why he's there. So if we are going to keep going with our Scrappy-Doo maneuver, which is anything you take out from a movie immediately makes it better, or rather doesn't make any difference whatsoever, he's definitely the first nomination for that, isn't he?
Yeah, I think as well, he sort of disappears towards the end of the film and you just don't notice until he comes back and it's like, oh yeah, hang on. He's not even back at school.
No, he's just not there.
Or college,
he's gone.
Or whatever.
I tell you who I was quite pleased to see and had forgotten that he was in it was Rainn Wilson.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why it sounded like I've just...
I did not know that him from The Office was in this movie.
That's one of those characters, or actors I should say, where I know there's a specific person in the film, but it's not until I see him on screen that I've realised who it is.
Yeah.
It's just weird, yeah.
Let's talk about Megan Fox for a moment.
Oh, okay.
Is she a good actress or a bad one? Do we have a view on that?
I think it depends on the role. I think there's been... I don't know, that sounds obvious because, like, different scripts and whatnot. But I think she's done a good job in Transformers. Maybe the second one more so than the first one. And I think there's a couple of other things elsewhere, which I actually haven't seen. I haven't seen a lot of Megan Fox things, to be honest. But I do think she's good in this role. My point is mute because I haven't seen anything else she's in.
Well, I know that, like you were just saying, she gets a lot of, I don't know, bad press for being difficult, not a particularly good actress, whatever. But I think she's perfectly fine. I think she's great. I don't see what everybody else's kind of beef is with her. I just don't think it's that bad.
I did have a moment of sort of sadness about actors in this film, though.
Go on.
because the voice of the Fallen is Tony Todd, and he recently passed away, but he's done a lot of roles, especially ones that we've sort of either seen or been involved in.
Has he?
Yeah, so one of the ones that I know mostly for by face is he was in Chuck for quite a bit.
Right.
He was sort of the CIA version of General Beckman.
Ah, don't know if that means right. anything. It does, yeah, it does. I know exactly who you mean, yeah.
Yeah, and recently he did the voice for Venom in the Spider-Man game, right. But he's passed away now. He's been in a lot of things, that's just where I kind of know him from.
I was trying to figure out who had done the voice of Jetfire, and I kind of couldn't figure out who it was. And I was trying to think, I recognise this voice, I know who it is. And so I did that little bit where you sort of dig in to find out who it is. And he's basically just an actor. He's not a famous person. He's done a few TV roles, a few films here, there, and everywhere. He was in Casualty in 1996. He was in the Bill a couple of times. It was an episode of Alias and things. But he's basically just an actor. And his main role is doing voices in Transformers movies. He's been in 4 of them.
Yeah.
It felt like that there was like an actor who I would think, oh, okay, it was him, either doing a British accent or you know. You know, for example, Hugo Weaving is Megatron, not obviously Megatron. But then when you think, okay, yeah, I recognize that voice, like Hugo Weaving, they've used a good act, they've used this big actor or whatever. And then for him, it was just a guy that does voices. I thought it was interesting.
I saw a bit of trivia, actually, that said he was the sort of on-set stand-in for all the voices. But apparently it just worked so well that they gave him the job of Jetfire. So that's kind of cool in a way.
Well, he's definitely done more voices than Jetfire. He's done lots of voices. Yeah. Again, we sort of referenced this last week. It's fine. You know, it's okay. You don't have to be a massively famous actor. Go out and enjoy yourself doing voices in movies or whatever it is that you do. I thought, I wonder who that is. I'll look it up. And my surprise was it wasn't really anybody that I'd heard of. Sorry to the nice man. but there you go. Let's talk a little bit about the directing style of Michael Bay, which we probably did a little bit before in Transformers. What did you make of the direction of this movie?
Well, I think I might have to hand in my film degree after this podcast.
Uh-oh.
Because I still really like Michael Bay. I think he does a great job. He knows how to direct action. He knows how to say action when he needs to direct. He always gets the characters to do the right thing. The thing that I noticed about this film, actually, which I really wanted to bring up, is the fact that the human actors, interact and look have the correct eye line with something that isn't there. So there's certain moments where you can see them looking at the Transformers or making a certain gesture or getting out of their way, and it's like, they're not there. But watching it and just knowing that Michael Bay is directing it in that way, it's convincing. They totally pull it off because of that sort of... There's some really good examples of it, but I can't think of it. Especially when... I think one of them was when they're going to blow up the Tomb of the Primes. Bumblebee gets there. Everyone gets out of his way. He gestures them to come over, that kind of thing. It just looks so convincing to me.
I'm going to go out on a very thin limb. So I'm going to crawl along a branch knowing that it could crack underneath me at any time. Okay? But... I'm absolutely on the same page as you are. I'll go one step further and say that he may well be the best action director of his generation. Name a better. Yeah. You don't have to like the films that he makes. You don't have to want to be the person that goes and watches robots fighting. He's not Martin Scorsese. We know all of these things, but name a better director of an action movie. And I bet you can't.
No, I don't think, well... One that comes to mind, but it isn't directly action, I would say, is Chris McQuarrie.
Okay.
But I just don't think that's quite the same scale as Transformers in that sort of way.
I mean, it is beautifully photographed. The first thing to say is the colour palette is amazing. It's not amazing, but it's always the same, isn't it? It's always half light, golden light, lens flare, but absolutely in keeping with the tone of the movie. The aerial shots of military things. Okay, if you like that kind of thing, you're going to really enjoy it. And I'm not a huge fan of it, but I just don't think I've ever seen it done better.
No, he definitely knows how to do the military thing. I think a lot of what he does as well about that is showing what the military are capable of. And like even the sort of skydiving thing, he just wants to show these things off.
Yeah, yeah.
And just show how cool they are in that sort of way, if you are into that kind of thing. So I totally agree. It works. It's just the way he wants to do it.
And it's not just big explosions for the sake of big explosions. They're kind of part of the plot. You know, and like all of these things, there is a human side to the characters. They bring something. They're not just one or two dimensional characters that just are walking props throughout the movie. I just think, like I said it in the previous Transformers podcast episode that we did, and I'll say it again: the interaction between Sam and his parents, between him and the character of Simmons, even the fairly badly told love story between him and Megan Fox. It's all nicely handled. There's nothing. It's not wrong. It just falls into cliche at times, but it's not bad. So yeah, I just want to give a little shout out to Michael Bay, who, as I said before, makes movies for 15-year-olds. It sort of tells you everything you need to know about me, I think. There you go.
I've just remembered something based on that, and it ties into quite a few things that I did want to say. The fight scene in the forest between Optimus, Megatron, and a couple of other Decepticons, that for me will always be a fantastic sort of action scene that I've always enjoyed. I watched it 100 times as a kid. But one of the things I do want to say about that scene is, if the Decepticons didn't have plot armor, Optimus would have killed them all. He would have won that fight easily.
Absolutely.
But because he couldn't, and they had the rest of the film to go, he didn't. Which brings me on to a little bit of an anecdote.
Oh, good. We do love an anecdote. Let's hear it.
Before this film came out, before we saw it, you said, "I think Optimus dies in this one." And I was like, "No, that's not possible. No way." Well, I was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
But like all heroes, he never actually dies.
Yeah, unlike the Transformers movie of years gone by. Oops. Eventually he comes back, but you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you never actually truly die in these movies, do you?
Especially Sam.
It's like Captain Kirk, who died in Star Trek Seven Generations, but died in the Nexus. So is he really dead? You'll just never know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true, actually. There you go. It is fair to say, despite what we have already said about some pretty decent acting, some very well-directed action sequences, that the script is quite weak. Would you agree?
Yeah, one of my favourite bits about the script is Simmons in the desert, where he sort of outlines how a plot should be, yet the movie couldn't do that.
Right.
I can't remember, beginning, middle, end, plot, whatever, tell it, that sort of line, something
absolutely,
like that.
Yeah. That's exactly the things he says. And I think, I mean, Shia LaBeouf said, he said about the film, we got lost, we tried to make it bigger. It's what happens in sequels. It's like, how do you top the first one? You've got to go bigger. And we went so big that it became too big, and you lost a bit of the movie. And in the end, it's just a bunch of robots. Yeah. In the end, he said, it's just a bunch of robots fighting each other. And then after the film came out, Michael Bay said he was a bit disappointed, and he described it as crap.
Yeah, I think I remember that, actually, yeah.
And they all blamed the writer's strike, because after the writer's strike ended, they had no time to put the script together.
Is that just an excuse, though?
I think it probably is, because if everybody comes out and says, oh my goodness, we love the script,
yeah,
well done. He says, well, you know, it came out after the writer's strike, and we just have to throw everything into it. And, you know, sometimes the best things come out of adversity, blah, blah, blah. So it might be a bit of an excuse.
Yeah.
I mean, there are quite a lot of things that from around that period where they would just say, well, it was the writer's strike.
That is true, yeah.
Mostly from writers, to be fair.
I take a big issue with this film, and I've always noted it. I don't know if you've noticed this issue that I'm going to tell you, but it's always bothered me. The scene where they go to resurrect Megatron, I have to count every time. They say there's five somethings going down deep where Megatron is. Okay, the Decepticons get there. The little doctor dude says, kill the little one. That leaves four.
Right.
There's four down there. They bring Megatron back to life with that guy's parts. Then the script says, there's six coming up. No, there isn't.
There's only five.
There should be five. And it's always really bothered me, and I've always wondered, does the doctor thing count as one of them? But surely it's too small. And then they didn't count them going down.
That's true.
Maybe, that's just always stuck out to me, really bothered me.
It'll be the writer's strike. It'll be yeah. two different writers wrote the same lines on a page.
I'll come back to that later. Do you want to take over? Yeah, sure.
Sure.
On your lunch. I'll do it.
I'm on strike today, so do you want to do that? Yeah, okay. you just have to say number. It was five, four, yeah. five, doesn't matter. Nobody's really watching. And then here we are, 16 whole years later, counting. I thought that was quite a good scene with the submarine. Oh, that was cool.
I like that one, yeah. I think if you're going to bring Megatron back, that's the way to do it, yeah.
The Fallen.
Yeah.
Again, you know, possibly MacGuffin. Okay, do you need the Fallen in the movie? You know, you wake Megatron up and Megatron says, what you didn't know, what I've been protecting is, and then you move on. You don't necessarily need the Fallen to tell the story.
As a kid, when we went to see this, I always assumed the Fallen was Megatron, as in the title, Revenge of the Fallen, Megatron. Because you knew he was coming back from the trailer, but you didn't really know the Fallen from the trailer.
Well, I had assumed, like you, that's true. And I wonder if that's how it began. I wonder if they say, okay, probably. We're going to bring him back to the Fallen, and then at some point they start thinking, okay, well, what about it? The other thing I think they were trying to do was kind of recreate a kind of Star Warsian relationship between master and apprentice. I mean, at one point, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty confident at one point Megatron says, thank you, master, or something like that in a really kind of Sithy way. And I just thought, oh, you know, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it does sort of come across as that. Whereas I think, I don't know, to me, it was always Megatron and Starscream. They were kind of the big duo, but it sort of feels like he was this is another thing that just doesn't make sense, because we're not talking about the third film, but it does always feel like Megatron was never in charge, and there's always some other MacGuffin that says this is why Megatron's the way he
right.
is.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, I think it works to some extent, but you could easily just have Megatron be the Fallen and then he's got another plan.
But I guess what they're doing, if you were able to speak to the writers when they're not on strike, I think what they would probably claim they were doing is, first of all, as you rightly say, preparing for the inevitable second sequel. But I think I would say that they think that what they're doing is world building. So
true.
So mm-hmm. so there has to be a background to these characters. There has to be a reason why they're on the Earth. There has to be a reason why they do what they do. And, you know, the explanation that we get in the first film was that they've been fighting for centuries, whatever. And then this, I think, is an attempt to kind of give that some background. But for me, it just felt like another MacGuffin. And even like the Tomb of the Primes, you know. And it wasn't just that the MacGuffins were bad, because I think they actually were. But I think they all had really bad names as well. I just think, you know, you just because you can write a thing doesn't mean that you should call it that. The matrix of the matrix of leadership.
I think that's taken from the original, though.
Okay, but just because, okay, fine. Maybe I didn't really, but just because you can write a thing doesn't mean it's going to work on screen. And suddenly we're all running around after this thing that turns to dust. But the dust just anyway. Yeah, I mean, we can pick holes in the plot and the story, which isn't very good. But for me, none of that really detracts from the movie.
No, I agree with that. Yeah, I think if you want to sit down for a 2.5-hour action flick, it's good for that.
We should probably reference Skids and Mudflap at some point, and then potentially just move on fairly quickly. They are.
Yeah. Do we have to?
they are problematical, aren't they?
Yeah. What I took from it is, I'd never expected to hear SpongeBob say those kinds of things. That's SpongeBob. One of them is SpongeBob.
Oh, I know. And I just think that they are... I'll go out on another of my limbs. This one's slightly thicker. They are quite dangerously close to being offensive. Would you agree?
Yeah, there's a lot of cringeworthy, are they going to say that kind of moments?
And once again, if you go into the if we invoke the Scrappy Doo maneuver and we remove them from the movie, does it make any difference?
Several times that I actually forgot they were there. There's the one scene where Simmons is getting into the car, and I'm like, oh yeah, these cars are actually Autobots.
I'm convinced, by the way, about the one thing I'm going to say, and it's not a defense of Skids and Mudflap or whatever they were called. It's absolutely not a defense. I think they exist in the movie because Chevrolet were heavily behind the movie, and Chevrolet had this new small car that they wanted to market, and basically that's what they did. I think it was called a Chevrolet Beat, and I've forgotten the other one, but basically, I just think that they were. Literally there to try and sell those small Chevrolet cars.
I watched this film on Amazon Prime, and that comes up with the X-ray trivia thing, and that is a piece of trivia that came up, is that those cars existed, well, those characters existed solely to advertise those cars.
I think in a way that's not a defense. I think to a certain extent it makes it worse. But there you go. RC is the Autobot sisters, and
all right, there's no need to be rude.
I
You
was
said
like,
that to me as a kid when I got the toy, by the
then it can stay in. The character is voiced by a voice actress called Grada Lyle. Grada Lyle. I don't know if you've heard of Grada
Ah,
Lyle
yeah,
before.
I have actually,
And
yeah.
she does lots of voice work, and she's done loads. She's like one of the most kind of well-respected, famous voice works before. She's done so many things. But she is, I think, responsible for the best ever cover version of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh,
So
I had no idea.
if you listen to this and you want to go out there and listen to it, it's just this very mellow, almost country and western version of Bohemian Rhapsody, and it's really good. And so Grada Lyle,
Wow.
shout out to her if you've never heard that. It's definitely worth a listen. Would you like to know the box office for this movie? Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, so it was made on a budget of $210 million,
Okay.
decent for 2009, and its box office was 836.5 million.
Wow.
It made an awful lot of money, and it, you know, has all these kind of, it was number one, it was amongst the 10th highest grossing movies in the month of July. It was the second highest grossing movie in 2009. It was the fourth around the world. It was only behind, that these movies were ahead of it in 2009, Avatar, which is, you know,
Yeah.
obvious, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince,
You thought so. What?
Half-Blood Prince, and Ice Age Dawn of the Dinosaur.
Wow.
But it was the fourth biggest movie of 2009. Like all of these things, it made an awful lot of money. And would you like to
Yeah.
know how many nominations it had for Academy Awards?
Oh, surely zero.
Well, you'd be surprised. It had one.
Oh.
Can you guess what for?
Oh, it's got to be like best picture. No. I don't know actually.
It
Visual
won.
effects.
You would have thought so. Sound. Best
Well.
sound design. Which, if I remember, I think it won that, and I'm not going to check, but I think it won that
Okay.
for the first one. But
Yeah.
I do think you're the sound expert. I think that's one of the strengths of these movies, by the way. I think the sound is amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure we said that the last time. Is that if you had to come up with the real version of what these things would sound like, this is probably it.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah, it was the yeah. I don't think it won the Oscar. I think it was nominated, but it didn't win it.
Right.
I think it was won by something else. But it did win many other awards: five Scream Awards, Best Actress, Best Breakout Performance, Best Sequel, Best Song, two Teen Choice Awards, seven Saturn Awards. It was SAG Award for Outstanding Performance of Stuntmen. But it was also nominated for seven Razzies.
Yeah, I thought so.
So, worst actress, worst supporting actress, worst screen couple, worst sequel. And it
that's so harsh.
And it's just I don't like the Razzies.
Yeah.
But you know, yeah, I don't think it deserves any of those things.
Not at all.
The CGI was extraordinary, as always, except I don't know if you saw it, but there's a point in the movie, I think it's the last big punch-up between Optimus and presumably the Fallen, presumably. Yep. And they are fighting. And if you watch really closely, it's the CGI in that moment isn't actually very good.
I didn't notice.
I think you should definitely go back and rewatch it.
Yeah.
And maybe revisit that. There's just a bit where it's like, it feels like they ran out of time. It doesn't seem to have quite the same finish, the same kind of digital grading that they did. I think they just ran out of time and eventually said, that's going to have to go in the movie. It's amazing, but it's just not quite as amazing. And you can totally tell.
One of my bits of trivia actually was about the fight scene at the end. Michael Bay was disappointed with it because he had to scale it down because of the runtime.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I guess there might have been deadlines to meet at that point too. Yeah,
it is a long movie, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. Possibly could be half an hour shorter. I don't know.
Probably.
I don't know what you take out to make it half an hour shorter. You could take out some of the stuff in college. I mean, we haven't even referenced the strange alien lady with the tongue on her thing or whatever. That's all a bit unnecessary, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know if we need to talk about that.
it is kind of driving the Sam and Michaela's story forward a little bit, but it's not driving the plot forward really in any significant way. You must have many out-of-pocket takes, pieces of trivia. I'd be delighted to hear them.
Many's a stretch, but we'll see.
Let's see.
Interestingly enough, the word Transformer is only said once in the film, and it's by Simmons in the bunker.
Wow.
Yeah, there you go. That's the end. No.
Is it ever mentioned in any of the other movies?
I feel like it's in the first one.
Right.
But maybe not anything. Oh, wait, no, I think there is in the fourth one.
Okay.
The random bit of trivia, but I don't know about the other ones. Yeah.
Interesting. There you go. It is. All right, it is, yeah.
According to Michael Bay, the scene with Sam's baby booties, or shoes as normal people call them, was actually inspired by a personal experience of his, where his mum found his baby shoes and gave them back to him.
Oh,
which is a bit random, but there you go.
I don't have any of your baby shoes, I'm sorry.
I still wear mine, that's why.
That's true, your feet did remain remarkably small.
I am a scientific miracle. That's what they called me.
No, what we called you was Sam.
Oh, well, in school they called me a freak.
It's not the same thing, is it?
I don't think it was about my feet, no.
I can have these people killed, by the way. I know a guy.
I know a guy too.
Maybe it's the same
guy.
Maybe
I could have your guy killed by my guy.
My guy
is the same guy.
My guy's better than your guy.
My guy's stronger than your guy.
My guy's Richard Armitage.
Oh, I can't beat that.
Ta-da, I win. Ta-da.
General Morshower is named after the actor who plays him, Glenn Morshower, and he will continue to reprise that role in every piece of media that needs a general. I said that in the last one, I'm sure.
I think you did.
Or something to that effect. So many things as that character.
You know, we've managed to do two of these episodes, and never once have we mentioned the actor Josh Duhamel. I can't say his surname. Duhamel? Josh.
Something like that.
Josh D. Major Lennox. We've never mentioned him.
Do you know what's weird, though, is that I was watching this one and thought, wow, he has he has a much smaller role in this film. But then I thought, I can't really say that because we didn't talk about him in
exactly.
the last
time. Exactly. It is a small role, but it's like, he does it quite well, doesn't he?
He does, yeah. I think that's one of those things that sort of describes who we are as an audience, where we're not that interested in the military side of things.
That's possibly true. I just think he does a really good turn as that as that kind of character, you know. And maybe the fact that we don't talk about it is because it's basically seamless. Yeah, we just believe that it's true. Yeah. Fascinating.
What's interesting about his character, though, is that he returns to the role in Transformers 5. So he's in the first three, misses fourth, and then comes back in the fifth one. And then it's also seamless, but I mean, he's interacting with different main characters, but it works as well. It's interesting.
Wow.
The filmmakers did a poll, or they took a poll, and a bunch of firemen fell down a hole.
I was going to do that joke if you hadn't said it.
It was to decide which Transformers were going to be in the film. The most popular one was Soundwave, which is funny because if you watch the film closely, they repeat the exact same scene with Soundwave. It's slightly cut different, but it is the same shot. It's fun.
It's a bit lazy, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my last piece, Peter Cullen, who is, of course, the original and film voice of Optimus Prime, he was actually going to appear as Optimus Prime's hologram, like as the driver, it was cut from the film but appeared in a comic, which answers a very interesting question. When I was a wee little kid and we went to a shop to buy some toys for Sam, one of them was an Optimus Prime, and they had a little gimmick where if you opened the Optimus Prime door, there would be a little guy in a cowboy hat, and then he would sort of disappear and reappear. So it must have been Peter Cullen the whole time.
Wow, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I also, I have a final thing I want to say about this movie, because I think it's one of those ones we could go on about for hours. But I thought it had a decent soundtrack as well. We always reference the soundtrack, but that's, again, you know, that's a pretty decent soundtrack that's in this movie, right? I mean, it's good stuff.
Yeah, I think this soundtrack is definitely a step up from the first film,
mm-hmm.
But it really sort of perfects it by the third one, is what I'll say. But I do like this one a lot, yeah. Especially the Linkin Park song, too.
Yeah, I mean, the Linkin Park song is... The Linkin Park song fits so well in the first movie that when you hear they're doing a second song, you think, oh. But it's great. It's every bit as good as the first one. So I liked it.
As a kid, when I listened to that nonstop, he has a fun anecdote, too. I sort of came up with a letter in my head to Linkin Park that said, please keep doing it. If they're making a Transformers film, please keep making the songs. Of course they didn't, but no. That's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame. I don't remember a thing about Transformers movies after this. This is the end. Right. This is either the end of the line, or maybe we did watch another one. I don't know. I suspect we probably did.
We did. So Transformers 3 is one of those films that you picked me up from school after and we went to see. On a similar note, I did want to say that for Transformers 2, the cinema that we went to frequently had a big brand superstore next to it, Asda. Other shops are available. Before we went to see this, we bought a Transformers 2 t-shirt so that I had the merchandise.
Awesome. That was nice of me, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think I'm ready to move to my rewatch score for Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Are you ready to yours?
I am, yeah. I think we're going to be here forever, but yeah.
So I gave it an 8 from memory, which is pretty good. And I went away and I watched it again. I'll try and be as brief as I possibly can. I watched it all in one sitting.
Oh.
I was about an hour and a half in before I realised I was an hour and a half in. And I just kept going to the end. And I like to think of myself as a reasonably intelligent person, not snobby, but reasonably intelligent, occasionally refined. But I loved it. I thought it was great. There was not a point in this movie where I just thought, this is 2.5 hours of my life I'm never going to get back. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I just thought, what is not to like about these big, ridiculous movies? So I don't think it's a 10.
Yeah.
But I think it's definitely a strong 9. If we gave half marks, which we don't, I wouldn't. And I know it's got script problems, and I know it's full of stupid MacGuffins, and I know some of the direction is silly, and I know that some of the CGI is overwhelming, and I know it's like being shouted at, but I loved it. So I'm going to go with a 9 for this movie. Can you believe it?
Wow.
No.
I think I was quite similar with you. I didn't watch it in one sitting because I knew I wasn't going to be able to, just time-wise. But when I did start watching it, I had that sort of moment of, well, I could just keep going. And I just enjoyed it for as long as I could up to the time that I had to stop. Otherwise, I would have just watched it all the way through. But I did enjoy it this time around, and I've always had a fondness for Revenge of the Fallen. I've always enjoyed it. And there's no different this time around. I enjoyed all of it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The music, the action, the storytelling, or lack thereof. So yeah, boring, not quite the same as yours. I'm going to stick with an 8 out of 10 because I'm quite happy with where I put it. It's not perfect, but it's not terrible, and I really like it. Last thing, Cloverfield poster.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I did see that in the background. Yeah, and that was a nice little touch. Yeah.
How does that compare with the scores for Transformers 1?
Well, interestingly, I think I gave that a 9.2.
Oh.
Not 9.2 T-O-O, not 92. So yeah. I think so far I've given both of the Transformers movies 9s, and you've given them both
8, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It was only a minute ago. We should remember.
Well, I couldn't remember the first one.
I think I've said all I want to say about it, and I'm quite surprised. Yeah. I'm quite surprised by my score. So it's your turn to choose our next movie.
It was. And I say was for a reason.
Go on.
I forgot to choose a movie. So I enlisted the help of my sister.
You have a sister?
I do, luckily. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a movie.
Okay.
The movie we're going to be watching is the 2005 Tim Burton classic, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Wow.
With Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp. Yeah. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Good shout. Good choice. Okay. Brilliant. Okay. You go first with your score from memory.
I think from memory, this one was a bit of a weird one, but a unique one. I think I enjoyed it, but I don't know if it's not recent viewings, but I think viewings since then have sort of lowered it a bit. So I think I'm going to go with, as my first viewing, my memory score, 7.
7.
But it's probably going to change, yeah.
I don't mind Johnny Depp, I don't mind Tim Burton, and this movie also features the incomparable Christopher Lee again.
True.
So that gives it. It doesn't have Linda Cardellini in it, which is a shame. I enjoyed the movie when I watched it. I just felt that it was utterly unnecessary.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'm going to give it a 1.
Oh, okay.
I just didn't see the point of it. So watching it again, hopefully, will either change my mind or not change my mind. I am on record, I think, as saying that Charlie and the Chocolate Factory from 1971 is one of my most favourite films of all time ever. And
yeah.
And so when I was watching, and that was as true then as it is now. So when I was watching this movie, I just thought this movie doesn't need to exist. So I'm going to go 1. Do you know we always do what day it is? Do you know what day it is today?
I do. It's Chinese New Year.
It is. Do you know what year it is, though?
Year of the Snake.
It is the Year of the Snake.
Nice. Cobra Kai never dies.
Timestamp the episode beautifully. It's also a weird day on the calendar because it's Wednesday, but it's also apparently the first day upon which Fat Thursday can fall. And if you don't know what Fat Thursday is, just Google it because it's very complicated to explain. But even though it's Wednesday, January the 29th, 2025, is apparently Fat Thursday.
Wow.
Well, thanks very much for listening. Don't forget you can contact us through our email at thebenefitofhindsightpodcast@gmail.com. Do keep those questions coming in. We do enjoy them very much, and we will eventually get around to answering all of the questions that we receive. The rather staggering outcome of this podcast episode is I've given Transformers Revenge of the Fallen 9 and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory 1. So let's see how that plays out. All it's left for me to do is to say good evening. Bye, Sam.
Bye, Dad, and listeners.
And listeners. Bye, everybody. You'll take care now, you hear? Bye-bye, then. Bye-bye.
Bye. One man betrayed by the country he loves. Classic.
With the benefit of hindsight, we'll see where the movies truly are.
or did they change history?